Hello, ramblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. Catch me on IG at Rambling and Gambling and email me, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. We're going to do things a little differently today, and I'm really excited to hear what listeners think of this. Here's the deal. Two interviews in this one. The second is with our guy TA, very respected gambler. He's worked in NFL analytics for a while now. He used to be a part of Sharp Football Analysis, and he has his own website called CleveAnalytics.com. TA is going to give us his early thoughts on the Super Bowl. It'll be like a 10-minute interview. Before that, however, we're talking to Brian Curtis. I'm really excited to have Brian on. He's an incredible journalist and editor at large at The Ringer. He's also a co-host on the amazing Press Box podcast. Today, we'll talk to Brian about gambling media, kind of a big picture gambling topic, something I'm leaning towards doing more of as we get out of football season, not a bunch of episodes on gambling media, but big picture gambling topics, other things that matter in the gambling world. So anyway, here's one of those. Let me know what you think. I hope you enjoy it. Here he is, Brian Curtis. Brian, not all that long ago, it would have been unthinkable. It would have been scandalous to have six sportsbook commercials every NFL game, to have announcers openly talking about point spreads, to have Steve Mariucci in an NFL-produced PSA reminding me to gamble responsibly every football game. And yet, here we are. Here's my overly broad first question for you. How did we get to this point in what feels like a relatively short amount of time?
We can thank the Supreme Court, you know, obviously, for getting us here really quickly. But I think, you know, the media companies were really ready to go. If you remember that moment years ago before pot was legalized in a lot of places across America, remember that was that rumor, oh, the cigarette companies have all these fields ready to go. They're just waiting for the moment. I feel there's a little bit of an analogy between sports media companies and that. They had the gambling podcast ready to go. They had the gambling TV show ready to go. Maybe they had the PSA ads. I also love, by the way, those podcast reads where you have to do all the states and the hotlines and everything right. Like that, you know. So, you know, I think in a sense, it was a couple of things. It was the Supreme Court making the decision, but it was us in the media, one, being interested in talking about gambling, and two, by the way, to be honest, being very excited about all the money that was going to start to flow through the media from gambling companies. I think that's what got us to today.
A little while back, I talked to Chad Millman, who's now with Action Network. He used to be with ESPN. He's the guy who pretty much started the gambling beat at ESPN. And here's what he told me when I talked to him last May. He's talking about the early to mid 2010s.
I basically just wrote a memo to the guys who ran ESPN. I'm like, look, I don't want to be making picks. I'm not saying I'm an expert, but there's math, there's science, there's market moves. It's a lot like Wall Street. There's general news. We should just be covering this like Shefty covers the NFL. And they were like, all right, keep doing it. Like, we're not going to put resources behind it, but we're not going to stop you from doing it.
Not going to put resources behind it. Flash forward less than a decade, among other things, ESPN now has a show called Daily Wager. Chad is with the Action Network, a media company that only focuses on gambling and sold for $240 million last year. Sportsbooks themselves churn out a ton of content. You know, Trey Wingo works for Caesars now. He no longer works for ESPN. I guess the question that I'm getting to with this, Brian, is the line between sports media and gambling, is it blurred? Does it even exist anymore?
I don't think it exists much anymore. It's funny to think about that Millman quote because, you know, as media consumers, we had been conditioned to read a lot about analytics, you know, starting really in earnest 15 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly, right? Your favorite football columnist started talking about DVOA and using terms like that. So I think the jump from that to gambling information, which is super numbers heavy, actually a pretty easy jump for people and not that far. And it's often, by the way, to answer your question, it's the same person doing it. Right. It's not like we have to bring in gambling guy or gambling gal into our media company to talk about this. It can be our football writers. It can be our fantasy football writers who, by the way, are talking about sort of semi-legal gambling anyway and talking about numbers and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't think there's much of a line anymore at all. And I think it just fit right into the sports media, just like fantasy did way back when, just like newish sports like Ultimate Fighting or wrestling or whatever it is fit in. It just took its slot.
Do you think that the general public, for the most part now, is already fluent in gambling lingo the same way they may be with a stat like DVOA? This is something I wrestle with every week on this podcast because we cater towards really casual gamblers here, not the pros. This is not a podcast for you if you're, you know, trying to really make some serious coin on this. Do you think people really understand, you know, the difference between a money line and a parlay and, you know, the side and the total, that kind of thing?
It's a great question. I think more than they ever have. You know, like how much casual sports fan knows, it's just like one of those fascinating questions to me, because I've seen that change so much over my career and my life. You know, like the way football is talked about on television now by Tony Romo, for instance,
yeah,
is way different than it was talked about in like 1990 on television.
Right.
Just know lots more X's and O's and things. So I absolutely think that people know a ton more. It's a great question. If I went to my mom and said, hey, you know, do you know what the money line is? I don't think my mom would know that, who was a very casual football viewer. But I think your average sports fan, yeah, knows a ton more.
Really good column last week on Romo, by the way. People should check that out if they haven't read it. I mentioned how ESPN has Daily Wager, the show. In April of last year, they also had their first BetCast, which was an alternate broadcast of a Nets-Sixers game that focused on gambling. We've seen other stuff along these lines. Do you think gambling-focused alternate broadcasts are here to stay?
I really want to know the answer to that question. Because here's the thing, we know gambling floats a lot of interest in sports. We know it floats a lot of viewership in sports. The reason people are watching this otherwise kind of semi-boring game is because they got a lot of money on it. That is clearly happening. It's been happening for a long, long time. But then the second question is, are they going to watch something that is about gambling, right? We know they're going to watch the game, but are they going to watch the gambling show, or in this case, the gambling alternate telecast? Or are the people who are doing this actual pros, to use your word, and they don't need it, right? They're almost beyond it. Like, well, I don't want advice. I'm good. I got my own kind of stuff. I don't know the answer to that. And I don't know that ESPN and the other companies that have experimented with know the answer to it either. But I think it's something you try, and it's something, you know, it's kind of like a lot of these alternate telecasts. You throw it out there. You see what kind of audience you get. And you're like, is this worth it? Or are we doing our, you know, part for the gamblers out in the world just by showing the game? They're going to be watching us because they want to know what happens.
I wonder if to an extent, the success of, say, the Manning cast, which I know you've talked at length about, help some of these other alternate broadcasts. Because I don't think anybody, probably even ESPN, didn't expect the Manning cast to succeed the way it did. I wonder if they say, well, let's try some more of these bet casts because this type of different programming, different presentation appears to be working.
Yeah. And you're already televising the game. So it's not like you have to get a, you know, new cameras and all that kind of stuff, right? You're piggybacking on something you're already doing. So it's pretty low overhead to get into that market. Absolutely.
We keep hearing news about gambling growth. For instance, New York just launched mobile sports betting and more than $1 billion was bet in a little more than 2 weeks, which is insane. It's way more than any other state has had in the first couple of weeks. However, if you're paying attention, there are little tidbits of information that could be pointing the other direction too. For instance, recently the New York Post reported that Wynn Resorts is looking to sell their WynnBET online gambling app. And according to the Post, it's going to be sold at a steep discount. Remember, this is what Shaq just signed up to be a brand ambassador for recently. He sold his stake, reportedly, in the Sacramento Kings. Well, the Post says the asking price for WynnBET is now $500 million after the company floated a $3 billion valuation less than a year ago. Do you think that this gambling bubble and the gambling media bubble could burst anytime soon? Is it going to keep growing?
Well, if we call it a bubble, right? It probably is.
True.
I think any of us know the answer to that. Part of this, right, is we're all kind of reaching in, or all of us, I don't know if I want to totally include myself in this, but a lot of media companies are reaching into this thing and saying, there's money right here. We don't quite know what the future looks like. We may have moments like this where we value things way too high, and actually gambling turns out to be this size business instead of this size business. But I don't know the answer to that. And I think, you know, you're talking about really reprogramming people's habits at a very basic level. I was in Australia a couple of years ago, and I had to spend a couple of months there, and gambling was legalized there, sports gambling. before it was legalized here. And it was amazing how it had become a part of life. Like you just sort of walk down the street and be like, okay, you know, here are some people gambling on the game. But at the same time, it had also kind of adjusted down. So there wasn't a novelty to it, right? And it had just become part of the scene, and you either did it or you don't do it, or you do it a little bit or you do it a lot. I don't think we've shaken it out in the United States yet, right? Where people are still really excited to do this and feeling their way out and downloading the mobile apps and all that stuff. So I don't know. I don't know that we know the answer.
That's a good point. It's gonna take a little time to find out. Brian, I'm gonna ask you to break out your crystal ball a little bit here.
Uh-oh.
Gambling media, what do you see changing here in the near future or the long-term future? Any guesses?
I think it's much more likely that the people you're already reading and listening to just will talk about gambling more than that we'll have this giant army of gambling specific people. Not to say that we don't already have a lot of those people, the company included. They're out there, right? Where they do their gambling podcast in addition to their other thing. But I almost think it's just much more likely that that kind of language starts appearing, and it, by the way, it already has, in football columns and in basketball columns. And that your favorite basketball writer does something at the beginning of the year where they talk about not only the possibilities of the season, but the gambling possibilities of the season. Right. I mean, I just think it's almost like fantasy, right? We're going to have a handful of people who are the fantasy people. Mm-hmm. But more than that, we're going to have a whole universe of media people who are just incorporating fantasy into what they do already. That's kind of where I think this likely ends up.
Is that a good thing? Bad thing? Indifferent thing?
Yeah, mostly indifferent, right? I mean, you know, I think if you and I went back and read newspapers again, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, we would just see things kind of creep in to sports writing and sports media and then sometimes fall out. And I think this is one of those things that sort of crept in and it'll be here for a while. I guess we'll have to see if it's good or bad long term.
I want to ask you a few questions about sports media stories and about you before we move off of gambling media specifically. Any further thoughts that you think are worth bringing up, Brian?
It's, you know, I just, again, I think that to me, the line that's so interesting is there just going to be this huge hunger for gambling specific stuff? Or is it just that we just live with gambling in all of our stuff, right? That's the thing to me. And again, when I watch ESPN or Fox or any of these networks, that's to me what they're trying to figure out right now. It's like, do we need the gambling show? Or do we want the football show where Terry Bradshaw goes, oh, by the way, the line on the Super Bowl, 3.5, Rams minus 3.5. I don't know. I don't know. And, you know, the answer to that could be multiple things on different networks. But to me, that's the interesting question.
I'm inclined to agree. We'll wait and see. I know you talked about this Tom Brady retirement story on the Press Box pod. I'm hoping you can elaborate here. We have an update since you talked about it. ESPN breaks the news on Saturday that Brady is retiring. Then reports start coming out that actually Brady hasn't made up his mind yet. Then Brady's dad comes out and says, hey, this is BS. Then Brady comes out Monday on his podcast and says, hey, I'm taking it day by day. Well, he really meant that because Tuesday, today, the day that we are recording this, he says, okay, actually, yeah, it's official. I'm retiring. Brian, what do you think happened behind the scenes here?
I think I endorse the theory that Tom Brady had decided to retire and had told people that he had decided to retire, but was reserving telling all of us that he had decided to retire and wanted to do it on his own schedule. I mean, I think that makes the most sense. Do we really think Tom Brady didn't know he was going to retire on Monday, but decided on Tuesday? Do we really think Tom Brady didn't know he was going to retire on Saturday when Jeff Darlington and Adam Schefter first reported it, but had decided by Tuesday? I don't think Tom Brady works like that. Like nothing that I've ever read about Tom Brady makes me think he makes decisions rashly and overnight like that. Right. I think this is probably always part of the plan. I think he probably figured it out sometime this season. And, you know, again, what are we arguing about here right at the end of the day? We're arguing about semantics. You know, well, I haven't decided. Absolutely. Oh, and by the way, I'm retiring. Well, okay. That makes it sound like those guys were right.
Right.
I think they were right. It had to be an interesting couple of days for Darlington and Schefter after breaking that story.
Well, in part because ESPN is currently in business with Brady, right? Because of this doc. And clearly, if you're a reporter working for a big company like ESPN, there is supposed to be a red line in between the reporting and, the Brady documentary and everything else. But as we know, things don't always work like that. And I do wonder what exactly happened behind the scenes after the story broke.
I do too, and I think Schefter and Darlington's like inboxes and texts and all that stuff would be fascinating to see. Because again, there's lots of gradations here, right? There's a way of telling a reporter like that, you're right, but we're not willing to say anything yet. And then we all sweat out and have a great time on Twitter for a couple of days, and then it does turn out they're right. There's a reporter like that, you're wrong, how dare you? Or where did you get this, right? And again, these all lead to the same place, but yeah, it is fascinating.
This is more comment than question, but you've recently pointed out on Twitter, I just think this is hilarious, several instances of teams hiring coaches or GMs and then touting that they have landed the first big interview with them. So for instance, you tweeted that ChicagoBears.com said they'd landed an exclusive with their new GM. And I think what, you had the Giants doing this too?
Yeah. And it's funny because it's like that. Teams have come up with their media operations, their own media operations. This is not new. But now what they're doing is mimicking the language of the media. And not just the language of the media in 2022, like the language of the newsboy in 1965 going, extra exclusive interview with the new coach of the Giants. We got it. I just find that very funny. And it doesn't really count to me as much of an exclusive if the guy is employed by you. Right. If you or I, if one of our employers interviewed us and said exclusive, Brian and Josh, I don't think that would be such a get. I think we would have to probably say yes to that request.
I would definitely have to say yes to that request. If my employer said we want to interview for X, I'm saying yes, yeah. No matter what. And I'm sure
it's the same. Yes, right now, probably to something in the Ringer.
Absolutely. Right. Exactly. Speaking of the Ringer, I'm a big fan of the Press Box Pod. You guys kill it. I love it. A few questions for you. One, who is your target audience for that podcast? Just in the past month, you've talked about journalists leaving NPR and the anniversary of January 6th and Dan Bongino. I loved the interview with John Lee Anderson you did last week. I would imagine that your typical listener for this podcast may differ from some of the broader Ringer pods and content.
It's a great question. And I don't know that I have a fantastic answer for you. Other than, I think one of the things I've always tried to do is start with whatever I'm interested in and go from there and hopefully, bring people along. So if I would say that there's somebody at the Press Box, it's somebody that probably likes sports, right? To some degree, if they're showing up at the Ringer, it's probably interesting how the sports media works but also as somebody who just reads lots of stuff, watches lots of stuff, is interested in how the media works, is happy to like pick up a book like Into the Wild and listen to John and Krakauer talk about it, John Lee Anderson, and listen, talk about his Che biography. And I think one thing is like, we often just underestimate that almost all people that I know anyway are polymaths. They like to read lots of kinds of books. They like to see lots of different kinds of movies. They both read and watch and, when they are interested in politics a little bit and all that kind of stuff. And that's really the person I think we're targeting. Somebody who's just interested generally in how the media works, but again, just like is interested in a whole bunch of different things. And, just again, I call everybody media consumers kind of as a joke at the beginning of the show. But that's who I am sort of imagining. Somebody just shoveling all this stuff in and wants a couple of people to help them make sense of it.
To me, at least in my own head as a listener, I've always thought of you guys, Press Box Pod, as more of like an HBO type of presentation, where the concern may be less about, appealing to the masses and the ratings, and more just because it's really good content. So you guys are going to put it out.
That's very flattering. We're more of a UHF, I think, kind of. Yeah, the pod's recorded every week. But I just think I think you are, whatever you do, I think if you're doing it in a happy way, you're saying, here's who I am. And I want to find you out there in podcast world or TV world or writing world who is like me, or who we can, do a thing together, right? Like that you will be interested in what I'm doing. And I think when you start with that premise, that's a lot more exciting than starting with the premise of, I'm going to go figure out what you want. And I'm going to just do it, right? What you already want. Because sometimes people don't they don't always know what they want to hear about or listen about. I always find myself surprised with podcasts, including the ones in the Ringer. I'm like, I didn't know I was interested in that. And then I heard a cool podcast about it. And now I am.
Okay. So there might be some overlap with that answer and what I'm about to ask you, which admittedly is a very nerdy question. I could probably ask you offline, but what do you look for in a podcast guest? You know, there are lots of people who are good interviews, which I happen to think you are, or a good writer, or this or that. I do think it's another skill set to choose a podcast guest, that selection process. I don't think it's easy. What do you look for in a guest?
That's such a good question. And by the way, don't you love when podcast guests say, that's such a good question.
That's
I don't immediately have the answer for you at the top of my head. Now, you know, to me, I always look at it from the interviewer's point of view, because it really is up to us to get something good out of a podcast guest. And of course, some people are going to be hilarious and great talkers and better talkers than other people. But to me, if you prepare and you want to know what you want to know from them, you're going to get something good a lot of the time. And some people, it's just like they're having a bad day, whatever, you know, it's not great, you're having a bad day. And it's just, it doesn't make for audio magic. But whenever I hear an interviewer, sometimes I think that person knows the topic they want to ask about, don't actually know what they want to know from that guest. You know, it's kind of like, eh, talk about this thing that happened. But what is it you really want to know about that thing? What is it in particular that you want to know? And I just find, again, for myself, other people are different and they're probably much better, you know, just off the cuff than I am. But the more I sort of write down questions and focus and think about what is it that I want to know from this person, the better a job I do and the better it comes out on the podcast. So to me, it's funny. It's such a good question. I just always think about it from an interviewer's point of view. And am I doing the right thing? Or am I screwing up and not getting the great answer out of this person that I know is there if I just ask the right question?
You are childhood friends with your Press Box co-host, David Shoemaker, many members of my audience may know more so from his Masked Man days, writing about wrestling. I did a 2-minute segment on Royal Rumble odds last week that I imagine David would be happy about. Does the pod ever strain your relationship at all? I imagine it could. Are you guys still cool? Because you grew up together in Texas, right?
Mm-hmm. We did. I remember the moment that David Shoemaker and I became friends because we were at a sleepover of a mutual friend. We didn't really know each other. And I brought the Super Nintendo game of the Royal Rumble to the party. And I just remember this moment where David said, "Do you like wrestling?" And I said, "Yeah. Do you like wrestling?" And he goes, "Yeah." And at that point, we were friends forever. It is impossible for us to have like the band style breakup for Behind the Music for the Press Box podcast. That will never happen. I will say though, that when with a friend, I don't know if you've had this experience, you have to put out a couple of podcasts a week and come up with ideas and show up sometimes on very little sleep. Dave and I both have young kids. It's just really tiring. I would say, yeah, you're just doing work together is a very different experience than like, let's go to the bar and hang out and tell stories to each other. And, you know, ideally a podcast feels like you're having a conversation with another person and just feels like you're doing it and you're having a great time, but there are moments where it's work. So I guess if we ever, you know, one of us ever sighs deeply, that's where it came from.
Last Ringer question for you, and then we're wrapping up the whole interview, but you've been with Bill Simmons for a really long time. I am one of many now, in my case, 37-year-olds who would get made fun of. I can remember in particular back in college by friends who'd be like, "Oh, did Bill Simmons say that? Oh, what did Bill Simmons say this time?" Because I would just I would repeat what he was saying so frequently because I enjoyed those columns so much. What's it like working for Bill?
I've said this before that, like, I think one of my favorite things about working for him is just that he, you know, Bill was one of the best bosses I've ever had, certainly the best boss I've ever had, at just wanting me to be me, you know, wanting to just find whatever it is. And some days, let's face it, it's not great. But whatever the best thing that Brian Curtis can do in writing or podcasting, whatever it is, and just encouraging me to do that. And I think in journalism, you may have had this experience in the media, so many people want to fit you into a box. They want to say, we want to be you to be X kind of reporter. We want you to be X write X kind of story. You know, here's our template. You fill in the template. And that's never the experience I had at all. It was always, you know, just do your thing, whatever your thing is on a given day. And to me, what's so exciting about it makes me work as hard as I can, because I always want to be like, oh, wow, I want to do the best I can and do a great job.
Listeners can't see me just sitting here nodding my head, especially to what you're saying about
as we subtweet every other media boss.
Media outlets absolutely do that frequently. Not my current employer, by the way. I really don't feel
but never
the current respect. Employer. But I have felt that like that many times in the past. Last one I got for you, Brian. I know this isn't exactly your forte, but this is a gambling pod, so I've got to ask. You don't even have to worry about the spread. Super. Okay. Rams, Bengals, who you got?
Whoo! It's really an interesting one, right? Because we've been like, I think we now have all convinced ourselves that the Bengals are a team of destiny after betting against the Bengals at least two or three times in the playoffs. So I'm going to go with the Bengals because I think it'd be more fun. And this also feels like one of those weird years. You know, we have those weird years where like, oh, wait, the Brad Johnson Bucks just won the Super Bowl. Like, how the hell did that happen? I feel like this is kind of a how the hell did that happen kind of year, but maybe with better players, Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase.
I like that. I'm definitely rooting for the Bengals. I have not figured out who I'm going to be betting on yet. Our next guest on this pod is going to
different questions
help us. Yeah, different questions. Our next guest is going to help us out with that one. Brian, where can listeners find you? What do you have coming down the pike?
www.theringer.com. I love giving out a www in 2022. Isn't that nice? Just in case somebody doesn't know quite how to type it into the browser.
Yeah.
The podcast is The Press Box. Comes out twice a week, usually on Monday and Thursday or Friday. Mondays, a chat show with Shoemaker, as you mentioned. Thursday, Fridays, an interview show. I'm going to have a bunch of stuff from Radio Row here in LA starting next week that I'm really excited about.
Oh, I love some good Radio Row content. I'm excited to see what you do with that one. Brian Curtis, Ringer editor at large, co-host of the amazing, I mean that, amazing Press Box Pod. This was great, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Josh, for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Here he is, friend of the pod, the guy behind CleveAnalytics.com. TA, what's happening, man? Thanks for coming back on.
Hey, Josh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It's been a while. I think I talked to you before the season started or right when the season started. So feels like it was just yesterday, but the season has flown by and we're finally headed to the Super Bowl. So looking forward to it.
I know you actually came on for our, I believe it was the AFC conference preview that we did. And you did great, man. I took your advice, played some futures, and it worked out well for me.
Well, I think I had faded I'm not sure when I talked to you, I was fading the Titans over the summer before they got Julio Jones. And then when they got him and then the Colts kind of, had some issues, I backed off that. So hopefully I didn't give you that advice, but yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, I didn't have any Bengals futures, unfortunately, so I couldn't help you there. That would have been nice. They're 150-1, but never got to that point.
I believe you had Patriots making the playoffs. That was the best one I got for you, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, well, that's good then. Yeah, it was a really interesting year, and it's, you know, I like doing a lot of long shots or taking a lot of long shots like this. So it would have been nice to have seen this Bengals run coming, but I couldn't. I mean, the best I could do for all the Twitter followers out there, back in early November, I gave out the Niners. I think there were maybe a game or two under 500 at the time, gave out them to win the NFC at 40-1. And obviously I was about 2 minutes away from cashing that, but Kyle Shanahan decided to get really conservative late and punt the ball on a 4th-and-2, which made no sense. They dropped an interception and, you know, that didn't pan out, but still did well. I took the Niners pretty much everywhere along the way. So I did fine, but that would have been a nice hit. But otherwise, yeah, it was pretty crazy with the Bengals getting there. You don't normally see that in the NFL, just kind of the out of nowhere team. And maybe we should have known with Joe Burrow.
Yeah, good call. And I want to get into that with you. We're going to keep this pretty quick. What I want to do is set you up with Super Bowl odds, a little bit of background, and then just take it absolutely anywhere you want to go. No pressure to make a pick unless you want to. Just give me whatever you want to give me. And by the way, for the listeners, we are recording this Tuesday afternoon, so still a long way to go before we get to the actual game. Does that sound good to you, TA?
It does.
All right, here it is. The game's in LA. You got the Rams. Most places right now have them laying 4.5 versus Cincinnati, over under 48.5, I believe, in most places right now. Cincy went 10-7 this season, won the AFC North for the first time since 2015, beat the Raiders, Titans, and Chiefs to get here. The Rams went 12-5, won the NFC West, and they've knocked off the Cards, Bucks, and Niners. TA, take it away. What are your early thoughts?
Yeah, I don't have a lean yet on the side or total, just still kind of working through it. And I'll just be honest, for anybody out there, I think this is just one of those opportunities where the prop market is just so fun to look at. There's so many juicy odds out there, some, you know, fun long shots to hit, you know, first touchdown or long shot MVP. So if you're looking to kind of just dabble with, you know, kind of low, you don't want to put a lot of money on the line, just want to, you know, have some fun and maybe you get lucky with a long shot, I would look to the prop market and some of those, like I said, a long shot MVP or first touchdown score type of odds. Those are fun. So, you know, but I'm really digging into the matchup itself to see, you know, when I do player props, that's really what I look for, is kind of if I can find an angle or two and just kind of follow that angle and, you know, hit as many props that kind of fit the narrative. I think it's important to have a game script for anybody out there that's looking at the props. You know, in your head, kind of come up with how you think the game's going to flow, who you think's going to win, if it's going to blow out, if it'd be a blowout, a close game, if you think it's going to be high scoring, if it's going to be a lot of passing, whatever, you know, you come up with, and then use that to kind of guide you to the type of player props you want to hit, either on the over or the underside. And, you know, I will say, if you're going to look to player props, if you're looking at an over, I would most likely take it early as possible, because the public, you know, will typically like to take the over on a lot of these props and they'll drive up the price. If you're looking at an under, which is most likely going to have more value in general, I would wait till kind of the last minute, wait till Sunday morning, if you can, of the Super Bowl, and then you'll be able to probably find the best price. So just a little of advice there. And that's how I'm going to kind of play this. But you know, for me in this game, obviously, that, you know, the quarterbacks have been great. These are two of the quarterbacks that have the highest yards per attempt in the NFL. I think they're both in the top five, so they definitely take some deep shots. They got, you know, weapons all over the place that can break big ones. I will say that, you know, obviously the you've got Sean McVay and you've got his guys that are part of his coaching tree, and Zach Taylor on the other side. They have both kind of fallen into this trap, I guess, of late, especially in the playoffs, of running the ball a lot on first downs, which, you know, if anybody follows me on Twitter, there's nothing I hate more on earth than just kind of most, you know, the predictable run on first down up the middle over and over. It's just, you kind of, you know, bang your head against the wall. And, you know, for both teams, it hasn't been very productive or successful, but their quarterbacks have bailed them out on third downs to really get them to where they are now. So the coaches haven't been doing them a lot of favors in that regard. And so it'll be interesting to see if both those guys continue on, you know, that tendency, because if we do see a lot of running early and then running on first downs, this could be an under. Now, again, I'm not taking that side, and the total is, you know, it opened at 50 and now it's down to 48.5, as you mentioned, but that's probably the angle why the sharps did take this under right away, is the tendency for both of these coaches to be rather conservative at times. And, you know, that will chew some clock. Both quarterbacks complete a high percentage. Both defense will allow kind of short underneath throws. So I think that, again, also lends itself to an under potentially. But, you know, it'll be interesting. I think the biggest matchups that I'm looking at, one is obviously the Cincinnati offensive line versus Aaron Donald and Von Miller in that defensive front for the Rams. You know, the where Joe Burrow really kills teams is against the blitz. I think these are the two best quarterbacks against the blitz in the NFL. So I can't see either defensive coordinator really going with a blitz heavy scheme. You don't want to get burned on the outside with these wide receivers. So I think both defenses are kind of going to, you know, sit back, try to rush four. But the you know, the Bengals are at a major disadvantage with that offensive line against that defensive front for the Rams. And, you know, can Joe Burrow, you know, get out of a lot of those sacks like he did last week? That's really hard to replicate against Donald and those guys. So that's going to be an interesting kind of angle in terms of how this game goes. I mean, if they can't block that defensive front, then the Bengals have no shot here. So, you know, when I look at, again, when I look at props and things like that, I'm starting to look at kind of who would benefit if Joe Burrow is going to be throwing the ball really quick and really short because of that defensive front and that offensive line issue. And that's where a guy like a Tyler Boyd, especially in the middle of the field, potentially has an advantage. The Rams are, you know, the one area that they're kind of soft on defense is in the middle of the field. They're 24th in targets allowed, 28th in yards per attempt, and 26th in first down percentage on targets on the short middle side of the field. So kind of the quick dump offs, the short slants, those sort of things. I think that's where you'll see Joe Burrow kind of target to neutralize that pass rush. So, you know, that's where I'm going to look at from a prop perspective. And if they can do that, you know, that will definitely, like I said, help the offensive line and the pass rush. But that also limits, you know, the amount of scoring here. And like I said, that could help an under. The other side of the ball, you know, again, middle of the field is a common theme here. The Bengals allow a lot of, they actually allowed the third most targets this season to wide receivers up the middle of the field on short passes. They're dead last in success rate allowed to those receivers at 70%. So that, you know, that's perfect for a guy like Cooper Kupp. He's second in the NFL in targets on those short throws with 37. He can own the middle of the field here against this Bengals defense and can really burn them. So that's one. I know his prop is going to be, especially on the yardage side, it's going to be really high. I think it's over 100, but he might just have a monster game. And so, you know, again, if you're looking at kind of longer shot MVP, it's easy to take a guy like Matt Stafford or Joe Burrow, but, you know, Cooper Kupp, obviously, if at like 6-7-1 could be an interesting case here if he gets all those targets over the middle of the field against his defense. So those are a couple of the things I'm looking at is really, can the Cincinnati offensive line slow down the Rams? Can the Bengals slow down the middle of the field, especially on the short throws? You know, because I think that's just an area that Stafford and Kupp and OBJ are really going to live. And, you know, that's really the key. Like, I think those are the keys here. And like I said, I'm going to end up, you know, looking at potentially targeting a lot of my props based on some of those narratives.
Really good mini breakdown there, TA. Let me go through a couple of stats. I'm not betting because of these stats at all. I just find them interesting. These are all from ESPN Stats and Info. Did you know Joe Burrow and Matt Stafford, it's only the second starting quarterback matchup between number one overall picks in Super Bowl history. Previous time it happened, Peyton Manning and Cam Newton in Super Bowl 50. Only other time. Two more of these. Both the Rams and Bengals are four seeds. That ties the highest combined seeding in Super Bowl history. So 4 + 4 = 8. The only other time that happened was in 2010 when the sixth-seeded Packers played the second-seeded Steelers. And I've got one more for you. When the Rams beat the Niners, Matt Stafford picked up his fifth win against a team that finished with 10-plus wins this season, including playoffs. 5 wins this season against teams that finished with 10-plus wins, including playoffs. That is as many as he had in his entire Detroit Lions career. Can you believe that last one, TA?
Yeah, you know, and that's why I think the QB wins stat gets a little overrated when you're on a bad team, bad franchise. Yeah. Stafford's been. You know, you got to have the surrounding pieces. He can't do it all by himself. But I've got a couple other trends if you're interested in hearing a couple things that have popped up here for the Super Bowl.
Always, man. Go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like to look at some recent history. I'm not going all the way back to the 80s because I'm not sure how relevant it is to today. But since 2000, favorites in the Super Bowl are only 7-13 against the spread, which surprised me. So underdogs have done really well. When you're looking at since 1990, favorites of 3.5 or more, obviously the Rams are only 7-13-2 against the spread. The underdog has actually won 4 of those 13 games outright. The totals essentially split even 15-15 to the over-under since 1990, but the over is hit in 10 of 16 games with a total of under 50 points like this one is since 1990. So if you only cared about trends, and again, I'm not advising, but you know, this is kind of saying the over in Cincinnati tend to, you know, lean that way just from recent trends if you're looking that way. But you know, I think at this point for me personally, I haven't taken a side or total. I don't think it's hard for me to take the Rams here at this 4.5 numbers, considering it opened at 3.5 and it's kind of rising ever since. I'm not sure what to put for home field advantage. We know, you know, we saw that Niner game last week, and, you know, we've seen other games where they don't really have a home field, and it's a Super Bowl, so it's less of a home field, I think. So from that perspective, they're not going to have, I wouldn't consider it a standard home field advantage, but you know, maybe the familiarity with the stadium will give them a little bit of an edge. So that makes it difficult to price in for this matchup a little bit. But I think that it's hard to go against Joe Burrow and what he's done. Even though there are some of those matchup disadvantages, he's just so good and he's played so well and he's so cool and calm and collective. And, you know, I personally, even though I'm a Browns fan and their arrival, I wouldn't mind seeing the Bengals win here. I think it'd be a cool story. So if you put a gun to my head, I would probably take the Bengals right now. But, you know, personally, you know, I haven't touched it, but that's the way I'm kind of leaning if I go that way.
TA, I promised I'd keep us quick. Can we wrap this up on a brief trivia question? Are you up for some trivia?
Sure.
All right. This is from NFL Research. Joe Burrow is about to make the 10th quarterback start by a quarterback named Joe in Super Bowl history. Do you want to guess the name that it will tie for the most appearances ever?
Ooh. Wow. How about let's go with Tom.
Bingo. And it's the same guy all 10 times. Wow. Tom Brady. Isn't that incredible?
That is incredible. I actually thought of, I didn't think of it at first. And I'm like, wait a minute, it's got to be Tom Brady because he's by himself probably hit that number.
It is. He's the only Tom, and he's done it all 10 times. And that's the record as it stands now. It's incredible. The other Joes, by the way, Namath, Joe Capp, Montana 4 times, Theismann twice, and Flacco. TA, where can folks find you? Please, man, plug away.
Yeah, so I have a website, Cleve Analytics, CLEVanalytics.com. I've had a site all year going for the regular season, kind of wrote up every game and talked about DFS and matchups and picks and things like that. And I've done so for the playoffs. I've got a Super Bowl package going right now that you can check out on the site. And I will probably have up there, my guess is 10 to 12 props. It might be a little bit more or less, but I'm going to have a handful of props, some real, you know, some long shots, I think have a chance, along with kind of your standard player props. And, you know, I'll probably end up not putting a big amount on the cider total, but we'll probably have something as well, at least with one of them. So, but at minimum, I'll have a bunch of, you know, matchup information, data, stats that you can kind of take and run with and do whatever you want with on your own that don't necessarily have to follow my recommendations. But that will be up. You know, I'm starting to post some things today, and, you know, probably for the next week and a half, I'll be adding things every day. So check that out.
TA, CleveAnalytics.com. Always a pleasure, bud. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it.
There it is, ladies and gents. We'll be back next Wednesday with a big Super Bowl gambling supersized episode. I don't actually know if it's going to be supersized, but it'll be something good. We'll give you some good bets heading into the Super Bowl. I think it's going to be a good one. And as always, thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing IG at Rambling and Gambling, and email me, Rambling and Gambling Podcast at gmail.com. Have a great week.